comes the sun, little darling, here comes the sun. I say it's all right, it's all right.
This is Eric Mann, and you're on Voices from the Frontlines, your national movement building show. Well, haven't we been here before? You're on KPFK 90.7 FM in Los Angeles, 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara, and streaming on the web at kpfk.org. The entire show today is going to be about police violence against Trayvon Martin, against Michael Brown, and trying to change the system that we know causes these police murders almost as we speak. We're going to have a really good discussion with Joanne Wipiewski and Kevin Gray, along with Jeffrey St. Clair, who they just wrote a really important book called Killing Trayvons, an Anthology of American Violence. So on Voices from the Frontlines, the big thing we do here is answer the question, what are we going to do about it? I want to start, before I talk with Joanne and Kevin, to say a couple of things. I would like at least 100 of our listeners to respond to three different vehicles. One is we are trying to build a rapid response team at the Strategy Center that can respond to events such as the acquittal of the police yesterday, or Trayvon Martin, or immigrant raids, and that. Please send me emails, or I should say, yeah, please send me emails at eric@voicesfromthefrontlines.com. I've been getting a lot after every show, and I answer them all. And it's important for us to know who is out there, because we put a lot of work into the show. So, Joanne and Kevin, I mean, you wrote Killing Trayvons, an Anthology of American Violence, and we booked you months ago almost, and here we are. So how are you both doing? And maybe start, because the book is a weapon. Why'd you write the book, and how could it be helped to build a movement?
Okay. Who wants to take that one?
How about you go first?
Both of you.
Okay. Look, we did the book because obviously the Trayvon Martin case was a kind of watershed case, not in terms of the reality of violence against black and brown youth or against police violence in general, but because it garnered so much attention, it became such a point of consideration of these questions. And so we thought that it was worth using that case, tracking that case, and so much of the writing that had been done on that case to really talk about the issues that were much more expansive, to commemorate other victims, to talk about the ubiquity of police violence, to talk about the way in which the killing of kids and grown-ups in this country by police is mirrored in U.S. foreign policy, how racial profiling is sort of endemic to the system, and how Trayvon became a symbol, but the Trayvons are everywhere. And unless we really pay attention not just to the specifics of a particular case, but to the intrinsic systemic issues that caused it, we're just going to be in the same boat over and over, as you say.
Well, Joanne, before I get to Kevin, just one thing. I ran out this morning because I was rushing to the show, but say the names of the five sections of your book. They're very good. And could you just tell us the big categories? Because this is a compilation of some excellent articles and poems. And go ahead.
The first section is called The Killing, and it includes documents, poetry, essays, articles about the actual killing of Trayvon, and about Sanford and the case. The second is called The Lay of the Land, and it talks about the larger, the larger picture. It includes the data from the Malcolm X grassroots movement study of 2012, and it includes a lot of other cases, Oscar Grant, Sean Bell, the overall cancer of police violence.
Joanne, why don't you just say the names of the five categories? That's
the
okay.
The next is called diversions, the trial, and the final is the aftermath. Sorry.
That's okay. Kevin, how you doing?
I'm doing good.
Well, you've been, you know, I think you and I have been doing this for a very long time as Joanne. What are some of the teachable moments here?
Are we talking about the book? Or are we talking about...
Well, relating the book, but what do you have to say?
I just came from I won't call it a protest. We were at the State House under the Confederate flag, and the turnout here in Columbia, South Carolina for the rally in support of the Brown family was very well attended, and I spoke about the context that the Michael Brown shooting occurred, the context of American violence, the context of American racism and white supremacy, the fact that every 28 hours a person of color is killed by law enforcement or someone under the color of law, that this is not new, that it's just as old as lynching, it's just as old as enslavement, it's just as old as the genocide of Native Americans, and then the big system that's tied to it. But the book is intended to put some of this stuff into context. What young people are looking for now, and they were looking for it tonight and talking about it tonight, is the context of the struggle, the context of the violence, the context of their experience here in this country, and understanding that Ferguson is not an anomaly. America is Ferguson.
Well, I want to talk about, again, to our listeners, because there's going to be an intersection between the demands going on right now in Los Angeles as we speak, because people are meeting again in Leimert Park. And one of the things that our own organization is doing in terms of demands is talking about hands off Ferguson, defend the right to protest and demonstrate, stand up to the military, police, and the surveillance state. And one of the things that we're trying to talk about is the right to protest. And yesterday, or today, on CNN, all this discussion was now saying that because of burning and looting, the conversation has been lost about police brutality, has been lost about excess militarization, has been lost about racism.
Joanne and I talked about this last night. It, in some respects, it's a setup. It's a setup for expanded police powers. It's dragging out the announcement. It's all of a sudden declaring protesters rioters. It's having a military presence, police military presence, that provokes people. So some of it's a setup to take away more rights. It's the debate now that folk are having about the right of self-defense, and what does that mean? Are we in a period of revolution and revolt, and what are the limits of that revolution and revolt? So, you know, I wasn't surprised of anything that happened last night. In a lot of these communities, you know, the first places to go, I keep referring people back to the LaTosha Harlins piece that Lee Ballinger wrote for Counterpunch a couple of months ago to get some kind of perspective on inner city struggle and what's going on amongst people in the community. And then, of course, there are the class struggles amongst black people, older black people wanting and more upper-income black people wanting more police protection, wanting the police to keep the undesirables out of the community. In some respects, that's their children that they're going to war against. And not forgetting about the war on drugs as a primary driver for racial profiling in this country by the police today.
Well, in terms of why you, me, and Joanne hang around, to quote from our leaflet, because you said it's a setup, the system is setting up the black community and black liberation movement for violent retaliation. The system continues to say that the protesters have the right to protest as long as it's peaceful and there's no violence. But this is a setup for police attacks. If 100,000 people protest and some people throw rocks or, quote, destroy property, or even have confrontations with the police, we know that will be a pretext for out-of-control police baton swinging, rubber bullets that can injure, lead bullets that can kill, tear gas tanks, rocket launchers, all given to the police forces under the federal 1033 program. It is inevitable that some people reject nonviolence, but it cannot be inevitable that police and military violence, a million times more harsh, can be justified by the system. We're able to write this on a Sunday because we know the system. And sure enough, Joanne, let's stay on the setup.
You know, yeah, it is. And I think, uh, and I think it's used to justify the violence program and everything you said. But I think one of the problems is that we sometimes, you know, kind of reiterate that violence program in sort of reaction to it. And when you talk about demands, I mean, I really think it's a completely reasonable demand to call for disarming the police. I think they are absolutely the agents of violence. I think this needs to be a serious discussion, not a pie-in-the-sky discussion, but just the nature of their business. The nature of their business has been uncontrolled killing. When they can kill a 12-year-old like they just did Tamir Rice in Cleveland,
right,
because he had a gun. I mean, I played cops and robbers. He had a toy gun. You know, we played guns all the time. Cops didn't shoot us down. And I really think the whole mechanism of zero tolerance, of three strikes, of one strike in public housing, the whole Clinton agenda that was enshrined in the Crime Bill of 1994, including all the sweeteners to liberal groups, like to expand penalties for violence against women, all of that stuff, stop and frisk, stand your ground, the war on drugs, the whole thing has to be called into question. And I really think disarming the police is not at all a ridiculous demand. I think that's an absolutely realistic demand.
Go ahead, Kevin.
And last night, everybody was on TV talking about, well, what laws need to be changed? And I'm thinking, well, you know, it's policy to shoot to kill. Police shoot to kill. That's policy. That's invoking the death penalty on the street. I've been trying to stay focused on that. What we, you know, we marched and protested over the unjust execution and murder of Troy Davis. We ought to be concerned about the police having the right to set aside due process and execute people in the streets. Most of them are unarmed, often for crimes that if they were charged and adjudicated, they wouldn't receive the death penalty. And so I think we've got to talk about this expansion of the death penalty by police departments across this country and the expanded power that we've given police officers, all these new tools. And even when it comes to Obama, you know, even in his initial stimulus program, lots of money went to police departments. That's why they bought into it, bought new cars, bought all this drug surveillance equipment. So we've got to stay focused on the power of the police, and we've got to really be focused on the shoot-to-kill policy and demand that I support Joanne that I don't think they ought to have guns, but at the very minimum, they ought not have the power to shoot to kill.
That'll be the last word. That was Kevin Gray, and you heard from Joanne Wybiewski. Let me just say this to both of you, that I think everybody right now is having conversations about structural change and the beginnings of a revolution. I mean that in the most serious sense. No police in the Black and Latino community is not an unserious demand. Robin Kelly, as you're going to, you're talking about disarming the police, and in his article in Counterpunch today, Robin Kelly's going to talk about police out of the Black and Latino community. So people don't want to go through murder after murder after murder with demands like indict, because, so I think we are in a new period, and for that reason, folks, check out Killing Trayvons. It's an important book. It's beautifully structured. Kevin and Joanne, thanks for being on the show, and let's stay in touch.
You can get it at counterpunch.org, by the way.
At counterpunch.org. Say it again.
You can get the book through counterpunch.org.
Well, this is important, folks.
And through Amazon.
Yeah, we everybody knows about the Amazon. But
right.
The good thing is, folks, on our show, you know that when authors come on, that means we really encourage you to, if you think it's good, to get their book. So Killing Trayvons, go on counterpunch.org and check it out. Thanks to you both.
Thank you.
I want to end by thanking Counterpunch, because Counterpunch is pretty amazing. And I want to thank, of course, our guests. And I want to say, see you next Tuesday. This is Voices from the Frontlines, all power to the people. And lonely women.